This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio, and we get to listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist or band. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes, and you might even find your next favorite artist or band. And if you like what you hear, make sure that you rate and review the show so other music lovers can find it. This is FUV Live Sessions with Victoria Canal. I'm Megan Suma, and I'm here with host Kara Manning at WFUV. Kara, today is a great day because we have Victoria Canal in the studio, and you are the Victoria Canal stan.
I really admire this musician, this person so much. I think that she is just enormously gifted. I was lucky enough to see her play last year 3 times, once at South by Southwest. I tried to drag you along.
Know,
you were
I
too
know.
Busy.
I was editing in my hotel room.
Right, right. And in New York, about a week later, when she came back to NYC, and then again in London in October. And she has knocked me out every time I've seen her live. But listening to this debut album of hers, Slowly It Dawns, you really sense that there's certain artists that you feel that you're watching the start of an extraordinary career. I was lucky enough once to see Adele playing Joe's Pub, but I feel that way about Victoria. She is that kind of artist, like watching an Adele play Joe's Pub, watching Victoria Canal play live, whether it, you know, it be here in Studio A or any of the venues that she plays.
That gave me chills.
But she is that kind of artist, just this absolute consummate songwriter. She has a gut instinct, intuition for what makes a beautiful song. She excels in writing about how messy and confusing life can be. She is a frank, funny conversationalist. And I just love everything about Victoria Canal. I'm just very excited for what lies ahead for her.
Yeah, I think it's a lot. I was wondering, we obviously try to keep these intros pretty quick because we want to get you, the listener, to the music. But Kara and Victoria had a really cool moment right before she left where she was talking to you about her physical vinyl. Will you tell everybody about that?
I should. In fact, don't just get Slowly It Dawns digitally, and please don't, you know, don't stream it. Yeah. Buy it.
Buy it.
But she has a water theme throughout this album, and she was kind enough to give me her vinyl in which that water theme is carried throughout. Of like drenching, of drowning, of raindrops spattered where the album credits are. And also there's a ripple effect when you take out the vinyl and set it upon the album, you see ripples. It is an absolutely gorgeous design for vinyl. So I urge you, not only will you fall in love with Victoria Canal, Slowly It Dawns, but the vinyl package is just exquisite.
Well, let's get to some music. What is the first song that we are going to hear Victoria play?
Well, the first song that she is going to play is what actually starts the album. It's June Baby. So for FUV Live Sessions, this is Victoria Canal in Studio A.
To God, can't take the half of it. Hey.
I'm Kara Manning with FUV Live Sessions, and that is Victoria Canal performing June Baby in Studio A, one of the 12 remarkable songs on her debut album, Slowly It Dawns. Victoria has been racking up awards since she was a teenager, named a Presidential Scholar in the Arts by President Barack Obama in 2015, and as a young adult, winning two prestigious UK Songwriting Awards via the Ivors in 2023 as a rising star and in 2024 for Black Swan. Victoria's mutability and craft as a songwriter is clearly evident on the road of self-awareness she takes on Slowly It Dawns, from the sparkling, sexy pop of June Baby to the intimate, wistful ballads of Hollow or Barely. Victoria has an intuitive, preternatural understanding of where the heart belongs in the body of a song. I have been so lucky to see Victoria Canal play three times in three different cities, Austin, New York, and London, and I have wanted her to come up to Studio A for ages, not knowing that she actually has been here once before. Welcome back to WFUV, Victoria Canal. I did not realize you were here with Michael Franti back in 2019.
Yeah, honestly, I forgot too until I came back into this building. And then I realized, yeah, I've definitely been here.
And you had a flashback.
I had a flashback. Yeah, I sang backing vocals for him on his songs for that tour. So it was my very, very first tour. And he brought me into all the radio stations along with his bassist, guitarist buddy. And yeah, and it was like my first time seeing radio. So this was literally, I mean, probably the second ever radio station that I ever stepped into.
Oh, that's amazing.
Isn't that
so
cool?
I'm so thrilled that we were really at the very beginning of your career then, weren't we?
Totally.
So I should ask first, when we last spoke in London, because I had seen you play Earth in Hackney. Mm-hmm. I saw you play that concert, and that next day you moved from London back to the States.
Yeah.
You were moving out of your flat.
Yes.
And you were going to a Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
You landed in Los Angeles, and then the wildfires happened in January, and you had to evacuate, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, my place was out of the zone. I live in Silver Lake, but I just didn't. It felt very much like the pandemic. You just didn't know what was going to happen. And the first thing I did when the pandemic happened, I was actually living in LA then too for like 2 months, and then COVID struck and I flew home immediately. This time I flew up to my friend's place in Seattle and just kind of waited until it cleared up a little. But it was definitely scary and no one knew what was going on. And it felt like from one neighborhood to the next, it was a different world, you know, like having Altadena be completely engulfed in flames. And then in Silver Lake, people are like going out for coffee. It's crazy.
That's surreal. That's, yeah.
Yeah.
So are you back in LA now? Well, you're really touring now, so you're not.
Yeah, I'm touring now and kind of just staying away a little bit, mostly because of my paranoia around like air quality, you know, and what might have been burned into the air that no one really sees, you know, and I have a bit of like health anxiety around that stuff, particularly right. Just around preserving my lungs and my voice. So I am steering clear, but I've been there a few days at a time and it seems like it's getting back to normal. The most amazing thing to me is just seeing the spirit of the people just like rise to the occasion. I mean, seriously, I am so consistently surprised and moved and inspired by humankind's resilience. You know, it's just amazing to watch. People will go through the most unimaginable tragedies all over the world and somehow find each other and somehow find hope. And I just find that to be so, so deep, so profound.
You know, you are a keenly observant person in all ways, you know, having conversations with you before, and your awareness and empathy, which is evident on this album, Slowly It Dawns. It's evident in the way your fans respond to you and how you in turn respond to them. I was just watching your interaction with everybody in the studio, and you are enormously generous and giving and acutely aware of everything that happens around you. Some of these songs have been around for a really long time, like Hollow. Others came about more quickly, especially for what you have a really a side A and side B to this album.
Mm-hmm.
I was struck by with a song like June Baby, for example, which you co-wrote with the 1975's George Daniel and Ross McDonald,
mm-hmm.
which is this the reason that it begins the album is,
well, the idea behind the album is that you sort of go from early life to late life, or maybe more so just spanning a whole lifetime. So to me, June Baby, other than obviously the title, it feels very young. It feels very naive and innocent and sort of this puppy love, like first time falling in love with someone and sort of knowing that you're falling deeper and deeper, but not wanting to get your heart broken, but you're kind of doing it anyway. And that just feels very young to me, you know, like no guard, no protection around yourself, you know, so.
And also too, you gave yourself, you know, you have released EPs in the past, Elegy, Well, very much about these absolutely stunning grand ballads that you do, and more gentle songs. You are a guitarist and a piano player, and that's been your area of comfort for a really long time. This time you took yourself out of that space of comfort and really delved into exploring pop music.
Yeah.
And did so especially with, I would say, 4 or 5 of the songs would count as that pure pop experience in the very start of the album. So is it true, though, that it was because you were touring with Hozier, watched him with a full band, and sort of gave yourself that permission to do that, to sort of explore and say, why the hell not?
Yeah, it was a combination of things. Definitely touring with Hozier and seeing him have such a huge show and fill these huge theaters and sometimes arenas, you know. I wanted to think a little bigger than just me in my bedroom playing songs alone. I was also influenced by a Chapel Roan interview where I heard her say that she like wrote fun pop songs to make touring more fun. But I have really come back around and realized that, to be completely honest, I find it actually more draining to try to be fun all the time. And I think actually something that I appreciate about the album that I'm sort of learning as I go is that I flip-flop a lot in terms of what I feel like doing, what I feel like playing and singing, and who I feel like I am, really. And so it's nice to have space for both sides of me, like the really emo bedroom singer-songwriter that's like mopey and, you know, eyes closed, don't look at me, kind of singing brooding songs. And then there's also the girl that sometimes just wants to like run around and feel sexy and feel loud and brash and overconfident in a way. And yeah, it's funny because whenever I'm in either mode, I kind of lament the other one. And I think that's in a kind of meta way. That's part of what the album addresses. I sort of question why I'm sad when I'm not sad. And I question why I'm, you know, thrilled when I'm depressed, or, you know, like euphoric when I'm depressed, or whatever it is. And I think the point is to allow all of it. You know, and as you get older, you just allow more of yourself to just be without shame or self-ridicule or all these things that we take up so much space in our minds with. You know, it's just all part of being human, you know. But it's funny, you know, like I share a lot of myself in general in interviews and songs. And so much of the time, what feels brave and vulnerable in the moment, right after an interview where I've just like basically talked like it's therapy, I'll just be like, oh my God, why did I say all that stuff? Like, why did I have to share that stuff? And then a week later, I'll listen back to it and be like, man, I'm so proud of myself for showing up the way that I was. You know what I mean? So I don't know, blah, blah, blah. It's just all like, I think it's kind of a neurotic and also cathartic way of approaching life. And I chose to do it for a living. And that comes with all sorts of chaos and untangling and retangling of songs and ideas. And
well, life is messy and growing up is messy. And you've been doing this since you were 14 years old. So when you do in a song like 15% sort of, you know, wonder about how you're coming off, how you're being perceived in the world, or any of these songs in which they're filled with wit and self-doubt and like anxious awkwardness, you know, it is so true. And it's funny. And you're very funny. There's this as much melancholy coursing through this album as there is just, you're straight up hilarious.
Oh,
so I mean, there is this balance.
Oh,
completely.
I
think that's why people respond to the songs as much as they do. Is there anything like when you were sitting and working, do you tend to write more on the guitar or the piano? Do you tend to bring in demos or lyrics? How do you, for example, converse with somebody like, you know, George Daniel or Egg, mm-hmm. you know, Egg White, in terms of what you want or what you perceive? And then where do they come in to sort of give you that ballast to finish a song?
It's a great question. So I sort of approach songwriting one of two ways. I either mostly in my bedroom, just sit with my guitar and try to write something all the way through. I started out on piano and trained classically, but in recent years found that it being my only instrument felt quite limiting. So I picked up the guitar and had an interaction with this guy, John Butler Trio. Do you know John Butler? And he only plays in open tunings. And he's the one that told me about open tunings. And I was like, oh my gosh, suddenly this is accessible to me in a way that didn't feel accessible before. So I started writing on guitar mostly because it felt inspiring and new to me. And I knew the instrument less. And I feel like sometimes knowing a tool less, understanding it less, actually sparks more creativity. So I was using the guitar as that. And then also it's just easier to travel with. It's you know, the guitar is really nifty to have. And I mostly only feel inspired on real pianos. You know, I've hardly ever written a song on a, you know, little trinkety keyboard.
Although you do play a Nord sometimes.
I do. Nord, yeah. I do, but I've hardly written on that Nord. I usually have to sit on an upright or add an upright to feel inspired to write. But anyway, so it's only when I really don't know where to go with a song that I'll take it to someone. So with Egg or with Ross or any of the other co-writers on the album, like Rhett Madison for Vauxhall, I got to a certain point and then I was like, okay, I feel like I reached my limit here, or I don't have the energy to finish it on my own, or whatever it is. And that's when I call for help, you know, and that can be a really inspiring process. I also find I tend to find more levity lyrically and otherwise when I collaborate, more hope, more lightness. Yeah, I mean, levity is really the word, just like taking things a little less seriously.
And you don't get wrapped up in your head as much and go maybe to a dark place.
Yeah. But writing alone is so necessary for me because I need to go to the dark place. I need to stare at it in the face and put it out on paper to feel better. You know, I need that. So I can't do either of one thing for too long because I'll either sink all the way to the bottom or avoid things that I really need to think about.
Right. You mentioned Rhett Madison before, who actually did a marquee show for us not long ago.
Cool.
And she co-wrote Vauxhall with you. She explores grief quite powerfully in her album One for Jackie. You, in turn, have also explored grief in Swan Song and other songs of yours. What is it about that? I mean, I would imagine that the two of you talked about that. Vauxhall is not a song about grief necessarily. It's about some regret and sort of looking back at a particular time with some nostalgia, but not.
Yeah.
But in terms of possessing what grief is and how something that is so difficult to articulate can be brought into a song, what are the challenges of that?
That's a great question. Well, so my whole EP, Elegy, which was two projects ago, I guess, chronicles the sort of journey of finding out someone is close to you is ill, sort of not understanding and like not understanding how best to handle it, and also the pressure of filling their shoes and sort of saying goodbye, which is Swan Song, and then bearing the weight of carrying on their spirit after they're gone. And the first time I heard Rhett, I felt so understood by her, and it actually wasn't a song on grief. It was called Pin Up Daddy, Pin Up Daddy, which is about like gender expression. And I find that the fascinating thing about her is that she similarly has a desire to speak on things that people don't normally say out loud. And I think that's the main crux of it, is there are so many things we experience with grief, with sexuality, with, you know, ambition and beauty standards and, you know, all these things. And the thing I find most interesting as a songwriter is, how can I say something out loud that most people won't? And I think she has that same pursuit. Also, Vauxhall is interesting because it also chronicles the journey within the song of basically, you know, joking around with your partner about like leaving your dreams behind and moving out to the suburbs, and then actually following through with it and being like, oh my gosh, I changed my whole life and I left my dreams behind because I wanted to be normal, and I hate it here. And I feel like tortured without the pursuit. But then even if you're pursuing, it's a form of suffering. So really the song is about reckoning with the suffering of filling that void in yourself, you know, as if anybody knows about the Enneagram chart, it's Enneagram 4, you know, it's like there's a constant hole to fill. And there's something beautiful and something tragic and just very real about that. So I felt like I could totally take her, the song idea, which was just the beginning, like, if I moved out of the city, would you leave it with me? That's all I had, really. And then I wrote the rest of the song with her. And we had these deep conversations just sitting at a piano about how sometimes we just wish it was that easy just to be like, hey, let's just move and leave it all behind. But it's just not. It's not a choice. You know, when you're called to do something, my God, God knows I could make money some other way, in a much easier way, and feel more comfortable on a day-to-day basis than pursuing the arts, you know. But it's you have to do it when you feel like that's what you're meant to do.
I'm so glad that you decided to do that song today for FUV Live Sessions. You are joined by Justin Goldner,
yes,
who is playing with you today. This is Victoria Canal on FUV Live Sessions. I'm Kara Manning, and this is Vauxhall. And that is Victoria Canal with Vauxhall on FUV Live Sessions in Studio A. I'm Kara Manning. Victoria is here.
Woo.
And woo!
Nice to be here.
It is. And that is a slightly censored version of Vauxhall because you do like to cuss a little bit.
All right.
I love your cusses. I am an advocate of them. But
my parents hate it.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're a sophisticated bunch. So they're like, why do you swear in your songs?
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask you about Black Swan, too, which you happily tagged on as a fourth song today. That song you co-wrote with Johnny Latimer and with Egg White won an extremely prestigious award in the UK, the Ivors, for best song musically and lyrically last year.
Yeah.
And that was right after the year before you had won the Rising Star Award. And now I have to say that Black Swan, the first time I heard it, made me cry.
Really?
Because it's stunning.
Wow.
Is there a connection between that song and Swan Song from Elegy?
Absolutely. Yes. I call them sister songs. I wrote Swan Song, long story short, about forgiveness and how when you're faced with potentially saying goodbye to someone, as long as we are alive, we have the ability to forgive each other, and it's worth it too. And I wrote Black Swan sort of in response, in a way, from the perspective of someone who just doesn't find it that easy, moves through the world with a chip on their shoulder and can't find the peace that Swan Song finds in letting go and surrendering. There's actually this film that I've been talking everyone's ear off about called A Different Man. No one's seen it because it's not being promoted, because people don't promote movies about disability, but it's starring Adam Pearson and Sebastian Stan. It's an incredible film, and there are two characters in it, and if you watch it, you'll see it clearly. One is Black Swan, and one is Swan Song. I've never seen it laid out so clearly in front of me, the sort of characters that I was trying to portray with each of those songs. So if you're interested in my music and you're interested in film, whoever's listening to this, go watch A Different Man. And
didn't Sebastian Stan win the Golden Globe for this film?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's more of a Shakespearean tragedy than anything else in its sort of, let's say, black and white storytelling. But it's a very interesting take on mental health and on how we're both responsible for how we show up in the world and also sometimes a victim of it. And two people can look the same, be afflicted with the same difference, for example. But if one has a spirit of levity and hope and the other one is extremely wounded and depressive or burdened, their lives will unfold completely differently. And that's the argument, and I guess by extension, kind of my argument with my Swan songs.
On FUV Live Sessions, this is Victoria Canal with Black Swan.
Staying with others, she's doing fantastic again. I'm just the mold in her living room, playing the funny friend. Late night emotional, eating alone. Just worked out why I avoid going home. One day at a time, I am falling behind into Swan it am, I'm sick of the damn chase. I'm saving a dance for feelings I can't place. Mama turned me blonde, black swan, black swan. You said I like to romanticize 2008. Call it what it is, the youth that I miss felt exactly the same. Oh, that's just the guy that I was, and I'll be dissatisfied with the name. Smoke of my constant emotional state. Black swan that I am, I'm sick of the damn chase. I'm saving a dance for feelings I can't place. Mama, turn me on, take my final form. Black Swan. my final form. Black swan, black swan, lost where I belong. All the signs are wrong. Black swan, black swan.
That is Victoria Canal in Studio A for FUV Live Sessions with Black Swan, which you will find on her new album, her debut album, Slowly It Dawns, which is out now. I'm Kara Manning. And Victoria, at the time of our conversation, this is Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day.
Well, thank you.
You are scheduled to play the Kennedy Center tomorrow night as part of the Impactful Connections series. And last night you posted on Instagram that given the leadership upheaval at the Kennedy Center, rather than cancel your show, you've chosen to go ahead with it and donate 100% of your fee for Advocates for Trans Equality as a trans ally. And you, as you write, as a proud queer Latino disabled woman, you are an ally of the unprotected and vulnerable trans community. When did you make that decision? And when did you decide to post that?
Great question. So I had been seeing murmurs, obviously, in the news about Trump's total washing out of the existing members of the board at the Kennedy Center and him sort of self-appointing himself as chairman. And I knew that this gig was coming up and I felt really on the fence on whether to cancel. And I saw other artists posting about canceling and I spoke to my parents about it. I was like, okay, should I cancel as well in solidarity? But then I thought to myself, I feel like that's letting him win a little bit. I mean, it's silencing myself. It's backing down. It's not using my voice in a platform where I've been to the Kennedy Center. I was there in 2015, awarded under the Obama administration as a presidential scholar in the arts. And it was a huge honor. And I am excited to go back and perform there. Obviously, I self-admittedly am not in agreement with anything about Trump. And I wanted to do something in my own little way. And so I thought the most impactful way that I can contribute, especially because I have so many trans friends that are experiencing such discrimination right now and are just afraid, you know, and like I care so much about my friends, you know. And so if I can still put on a performance and give away what I was meant to make to an organization that is fighting for trans rights, like, I'm absolutely going to do that. And, you know, if they want to cancel the show, then I'll let them do it. But I'm not going to silence myself just because that's what they want me to do.
We first chatted online because you did a Mental Health Awareness Month Q&A with me, which I was very grateful for. You are also have been very much an advocate for everything, for the LGBTQ community, for the disabled community. You yourself have a limb differentiation, which has been, you know, it's like, I'm really hoping not to ever talk to you about that again.
Because, I don't mind.
Because I think that, you know, being sort of appreciated as a musician, no matter who you are, is what's critical, yeah. You know, but
the difference is with you, for the record, you care. And yeah. You're not trying to belittle or tokenize or reduce me to one thing. It is part of who I am, you know.
Have you run into that, though?
And absolutely. Absolutely.
If I may ask.
For the first 6 or 7 years of my career, it's one, all a news outlet would ask about. Two, instead of referring to me by name in the headline, they would refer to me as one-armed piano player. And that's not even what I do. I'm a singer-songwriter. I'm not a one-armed piano player. Like, I play piano, but it's reducing me to one thing that feels like I'm being used. And I don't feel used in this context because you obviously see me as so much more of a person, you know? And I think that's really what matters in general, is just to see people as human beings. And this goes across the board, whether someone is living in the Palisades and has a recognizable name and they've just lost their house, or a family that's trying to survive in Gaza. Like, these people are all equal and they are whole people. And it's one of my songs, barely, it talks about it. Like, every single face that you see as you pass them on the street has an entire universe of their own. They're grieving, they're loving, you know, and it's like, it's so important to treat people, it's so important to treat people with respect and kindness, and to fight for people who don't have a voice. And there's so many of those right now, you know, so many. And it matters so much to me. And so if I can somehow, you know, I feel pretty respected in my life. All things considered, I have the privilege of having a disability that is kind of inobtrusive to the way that the world treats me, for the most part. And I've fought for that too. But there are so many people, like you could see in A Different Man, for example, so many examples of people who suffer through their life because they're not respected by society and they're not seen as human by society. So honestly, like I just think it matters so much to listen, to learn, to love and treat people with care, you know, because we're all going through the same thing.
It's staggering to me that how it's so difficult for some people to do that with others who do not see other people as being human.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You have an absolutely stunning voice. When were you aware that you could sing, that you were gifted with this extraordinary voice?
Oh, gosh. Well, my grandma was a piano teacher and she led the choir at her church. And we would visit her in the summers in Georgia. And I would sit on her lap and watch her play and just sing along Somewhere Over the Rainbow, or, you know, like the old Wizard of Oz, all the songs. And she noticed and told my parents. She was like, you should put her in lessons. And so I started vocal lessons when I was 6. Yeah, I mean, I've just always loved it, you know, and I love harmony, and I've loved harmony since I was very, very young. You know, I got into Jason Mraz's early records when I was in like lower school and middle school, and would always sing a harmony. And it just led to me dreaming about what a life in music would be like.
And I would be remiss to overlook the fact that you have a mentor and a friend in Chris Martin of Coldplay.
Mm-hmm.
You had your pyramid stage moment at Glastonbury last year of doing Paradise with Coldplay. You had originally just, though, texted or emailed Chris asking if you could just come to Glastonbury to, like, watch.
Yeah.
You can't watch. You can come on stage and perform with everybody else.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I was literally texting him for tickets like a leech. I was like, I was that obnoxious person that was like, do you have any guest list for Glastonbury? And then he called me and was like, hey, I got you one better. Come on and play with us. And initially I was just meant to play the part for Paradise. And I was like, okay, what keys is it in? And like, I was really excited. Oh my gosh. I literally have a distinct memory of hanging out with an early mentor, Shen Winberg, who was a family friend. And he and I would sit at the piano and sing Paradise, like when I was 12 or 13 years old. One of my first YouTube covers, which is now taken down because it's mortifying, is me singing Fix You on a boat, like a little canoe, with this guy Shen. I think it has been taken down, maybe either by him or by me.
Now you're gonna go home and check.
I'm gonna check. No one should ever see it. But I mean, all that said, like, it's just super full circle. And I knew the part, you know what I mean? Like, I was ready for that day. I was ready for that call. I went to this summer program at Berklee 5 week, Berklee College of Music. And there was this teacher, Livingston Taylor, who's James Taylor's brother. And he said something once that has never left me. He said, it's sad to be ready and not get the call, but it's tragic to get the call and not be ready. And I feel like that's like my whole life. You know, there's not been one certain thing, like one explosion to my career. It's been one step at a time over many, many, many years, like coming up on 10 years of touring. And I just feel like being prepared for things to pop up is the key. You know, it's like you train and you hope and you dream, but you don't sit around waiting for it. You act as if it, you know, they're calling you to the Olympics, and you got to be in shape for it. You know what I mean? Anyway, it was the most special day of my life so far, and I will never forget it. And it was honestly just a huge honor to see how one of the biggest bands in the world operate. And when you say, you know, it's a huge compliment when you're saying how I treat people when I walk into this space, because that's what I observed in Chris, and he is so consistent about it, and I take direct inspiration from people like him on how to treat others and how to be really present and be grateful for your life. I mean, gosh, we're playing songs. Like, how cool is that for a living? How cool is that? That's pretty crazy.
Victoria Canal, I want to talk to you all day. This is, and I can't, and you know, and I know that we have to wrap up. And your generosity and spirit throughout this interview has I'm really, really happy for you. Slowly at Dawn's is your debut album, and the last song that you're going to do today is Hollow, which is actually the oldest song on the album.
Mm.
That it came about how long ago?
You
how long
what?
Have you been sitting with it?
I might actually have been wrong about that if I've said it in the past. Because when I think about it, Swan Song I wrote in 2020. And Hollow I think I wrote in 2021.
When do you know that, for example, a song like Hollow, as you build it, you know, because it is a piano song. It's a very, very intimate, introspective song. When those sort of come to you, do you find that they sort of draw out over a number of weeks of development, or is it really very quick that you are there and then the song sort of is an apparition that sort of descends upon you?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't know if I would put it that elegantly. I think it's more like puking.
Puking is good.
Yeah, I feel like it's like one like barf at a time of a verse or a whole song sometimes. With that song in particular, it was funny. I was staying with my friend Joe, and Joe Dutteridge, he goes by Later Youth. He's an amazing artist in London. And he had shown me a song of his called Hollow, which I forgot. I forgot that song was called Hollow. And I had this little verse idea. And a couple days into staying there on my own, I called him. I was like, hey, I'm writing this song and I think it's called Hollow. He's like, what gives? Like, I just showed you a song of mine called Hollow. So I ended up giving him writing credit because I totally accidentally.
That's nice of you.
I mean, I had to. Come on. It's in these ways, we kind of subliminally steal from each other all the time, whether we want to or not. But anyway, all that said, I was sitting at his piano and I was looking for lyrics for the chorus because all of it had poured out of me up until that point. And then I looked on his bookshelf and he had a stack of books that actually ended up spelling out the first line of the chorus. It was like, so the line of the chorus, I think, is there's no morning glory, no Bible or moral of the story to follow. Beneath it all, we are hollow. So it was like a Patti Smith book, a Joan Didion, Joni Mitchell, and a Bible. And somehow the combination of words, or maybe I took one out and flipped through a few pages and like highlighted random words, all of that spelled out the chorus.
Oh, that's extraordinary.
Yeah. So that's the way that chorus was written.
Victoria Canal, will you come back soon so we can keep talking?
Anytime you want, darling.
Victoria Canal's debut album is Slowly It Dawns. It is 12 exquisite songs of and the start of what will be and already is a remarkable career. Thank you so much for coming
today. Thank you for having me.
Really a privilege to talk to you.
It's so much fun. Thank you.
On FUV Live Sessions, this is Hollow in Studio A. Walking on tippy toes, no.
That was Victoria Canal performing and in conversation at WFUV in New York City. A big thank you to Victoria for joining us in the studio and to Parlophone Records and Deep Field Management. Thanks to our FUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara, James Higgins, and Sophia Derig Palumbo. Our FUV live studio sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Our associate producers for this episode were Bayan Menjerink and Cadiz Salazar. Megan Suma is our executive producer. Our theme music was composed by John Crick. Be sure to follow FUV live sessions wherever you get your podcasts so you can listen to new episodes and find your next favorite artist or band. New episodes drop every Monday. You can also catch audio and video of FUV live sessions on WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm your host and producer for this episode, Kara Manning.